Does the Bible condone or even endorse slavery? Stay tuned and find out on Unapologetic. You can't look at the news in recent months or even years without seeing the racial tensions that exist in America. White rights, black rights, racial supremacy, all of these terms get tossed about. And when you start talking about race, what often comes up is the historical fact that Christians often owned slaves long ago. And they couched this in terms of slavery being talked about and provided for in the Bible sometimes. And so the question we want to address today is slavery actually condoned or even endorsed or encouraged by the Bible? Before we get there, there are a couple concepts I want to address. The first is something called the is-ought fallacy. And this is just simply to mistakenly believe that something ought to be a certain way because it is that way. So here's an example. Jesus gives a provision for divorce. In Mark 10:5, he says, "Abraham wrote this commandment for you because of your hard hearts." He's not saying you should get a divorce. He's saying that this happens, but that doesn't mean it should be that way. And we're going to see the same type of thing when we talk about slavery. The other concept is something that C.S. Lewis coined, chronological snobbery. And that's to simply mistakenly think that the thought, morality, art, science, or those types of things of an earlier time period is inherently inferior to that of our current time. It's really easy for us to look back and say, gosh, how did they get it so wrong? But I wonder who's going to look back at us and think, how did they get it so wrong? So, slavery. Well, the first thing is often when someone thinks of slavery, they think of this quote I'm going to read from Frederick Douglass. And here's what he says. "He was a cruel man, hardened by a long life of slaveholding. He would at times seem to take great pleasure in whipping a slave. I've often been awakened at dawn by the most heart-rending shrieks of my own aunt of mine, whom he would tie to a joist and whip upon her naked back until she was literally covered with blood. I remember the first time I ever witnessed this horrible exhibition. I was quite a child, but I remember it well, and I never shall forget it whilst I remember anything. It was the first of a long series of outrages, of which I was doomed to be a witness and a participant. It struck me with awful force. It was the blood-stained gate, the entrance to the hell of slavery, through which I was about to pass. It was a most terrible spectacle. I wish I could commit to paper the feelings with which I beheld it." That's Frederick Douglass writing. And he accurately captures very vividly the picture of what we often think about when we think of slavery. We think of antebellum, pre-Civil War South. We think of chains and slave ships and subjugation of a race and kidnapping and forced labor and all of these types of things. And so when we come to the Bible and we see the word slavery, we bring all of this baggage with us. And that's a mistake. Because the slavery in the Old Testament, specifically with regards to Israel, was servitude. And this is the same type of servitude that was in play when Britain brought people over to the colonies. In fact, 2/3 of the white immigrants to the colonies were indentured servants. They had said, well, if you take me over to the New World, I will work for you for this length of time. You quote-unquote own me when it comes to my work product, what I'm going to produce, and who I'm going to work for. And we actually use terms today like buy, sell, acquire. And we don't think of these as slavery-endorsing terms. Like, someone will buy a sports team. Well, what is that? That's a group of people. And players will be traded or acquired. And this doesn't mean that they're treated poorly. And the same type of language is used in the Old Testament of servants. So the first thing we need to understand is that the slavery of the Old Testament was different. It was servitude. And servitude allowed for providing food or shelter for your family. Leviticus 25:47 says, "If one of your countrymen becomes poor and sells himself," so you could sell yourself into servitude, and the word has been translated in the Bible as slavery, to avoid not being able to provide for your family. And just 2 verses later in verse 49, it says, "If he prospers, he can redeem himself." So you could get out of that servitude relationship. And so what we see here is that servitude was voluntary, not compulsory. That's a big difference from the slavery most people have in mind of the South. And in fact, unavoidable lifelong servanthood was prohibited. Debts were to be forgiven every seventh year. We see this in Deuteronomy 15. And property that had been mortgaged was to be returned after 49 years on the year of Jubilee. But it gets even more different from the concept of slavery in the South that we often think of. The Bible says, quote, "You must not rule over him harshly," talking about a slave or a servant, "but you must fear your God." So we've got two things at play here. Don't rule over your slave harshly. Well, that's very different from that Frederick Douglass quote that we looked at. But additionally, it says you must fear your God. And I think the reason for this is this: the servant owner, if you will, that term doesn't totally capture the concept, but nonetheless we'll use it, was a man in authority over his servants. And he needed to remember that however he treated them, he was under the authority of God. There is a hierarchy. He is not God of these people, someone else is. But it wasn't even supposed to get to this whole concept of indentured servitude. The poor were given opportunities to glean from the edges of fields or pick lingering fruit on trees after their fellow Israelites had harvested the land. And Israelites were commanded to lend freely to the poor with no interest. So quite a few differences so far. You could voluntarily enter this. You could buy yourself out of this arrangement, which was to provide for your family. Your slave owner could not, or servant owner could not, treat you harshly. But more than that, you weren't allowed to kidnap people. And in fact, in Exodus 21:16, it says, "He who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or he is found in his possession, shall surely be put to death." And then additionally in Deuteronomy 24:7, "If a man is caught kidnapping any of his countrymen of the sons of Israel, and he deals with him violently or sells him, then that thief shall die, so that you shall purge the evil from among you." So no kidnapping, another big difference. Now, is this a perfect system? No, it's not. And there are other things we haven't gotten into, but what I want you to see just right off the bat is it is quite different. It is culturally and geographically revolutionary for the time in which this took place. When you look at the surrounding other ancient Near East groups of people, their track record on human rights and civil liberties was horrible. So was Israel perfect? No. But what we see is God moving people towards a better system all throughout the Old Testament, ultimately foreshadowing the need for Christ, because no set of laws could ultimately provide for a stable society. Now, so that's Old Testament slavery in a very short bit. Briefly, New Testament slavery is very different. When you think of, when you read the word slave in the New Testament and you think of antebellum slavery, you're on the right track. So these exist in very different time periods. Old Testament, those laws we looked at, those provisions, those were for when Israel was its own sovereign nation state. The New Testament is largely written to people under Roman rule. And so the slavery that exists is one of the Roman Empire. And so slaves were not treated well, often in that type of environment. But what's noteworthy is that slaves are told to serve their masters well. Now, sometimes people want to say, see, that's an endorsement of slavery, but it's actually not. Because what would happen if a slave got converted to Christianity and then all the slaves started revolting? They're all going to get killed. And additionally, what happens when a slave stays and serves his master well and serves him better because he's a Christian? What we see when we look at extra-biblical accounts, and some in the Bible, actually, of the New Testament church, is that oftentimes slaves and their masters went to the same church. Slaves could help convert their masters to Christianity, which they would not be able to do if they fled once they became a Christian. And furthermore, Galatians 3:28 paints a picture of how God sees everyone. There's neither slave nor free, Jew nor Greek, male nor female, in God's eyes at the foot of the cross. We are all brothers and sisters in Christ in that way as Christians. So there's no hierarchy in the church and how people exist or in how God sees us. So briefly, that's slavery in the Bible. It's not the slavery we think of when we think of the Civil War and the South and all of that. Was it perfect? Was it a perfect system? No, it wasn't. But it was so much better than the surrounding areas. And honestly, it's so much better than what existed in the South. The last thing I want to point out is, does this mean that everyone who was an Israelite applied what the Bible said they should? Does that mean every slave or servant owner treated their servant well and didn't treat them harshly? No. Does it mean that no one was kidnapped? No, it doesn't. We've got examples like of Joseph, who was kidnapped by his own brothers and then sold into slavery. So this is what I was getting at initially when I said the is-ought fallacy. There are things described in the Bible that should not be that way. They ought not be that way, but they were that way, right? So murder is recounted as having happened in the Bible, but murder is obviously wrong. So we can't just look at something that is described to have happened and then think that it was prescribed to be that way. And this whole concept of descriptive versus prescriptive is extremely important. And we'll talk more about it in future weeks on this podcast at some point. So I hope this has been helpful. I hope you see that you've got some talking points when it comes to people bringing up slavery and what the Bible has to say, and that it's very different from slavery in the South. I'm talking to you from beautiful Yosemite National Park at the Wawona Inn, and so if you've heard music or odd sounds in the background, it's because I'm in a different set of circumstances this week. But I will be back in beautiful, hot Tallahassee next week. And I hope you'll join me then for Unapologetic.